Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1258, we present four stories by new Life Rattle writer Bailey Green. Bailey Green was born in Montreal, Quebec in 1990. She grew up in Saint-Lazare, a small town just west of the island of Montreal. Her parents are both of Scottish origin. Her mother was a stay-at-home mom, and her father a sales manager in the packaging industry. Growing up Anglophone in La Belle Provence, Bailey learned to speak French fluently. She had a happy childhood, spending her summers up at the family's cottage on Lake Louisa, reading, swimming, going for boat rides, and picking blueberries with her younger brother Trevor. When she was in her teens, her father unexpectedly lost his job. Her family underwent a huge change as her mother trained to become a yoga teacher to help support the family, and her father started his own photography business. Their strength and love inspired Bailey to chase her dreams. After completing college, where she studied professional theater acting, Bailey was accepted into university and now lives in Mississauga, where she continues to study her craft while pursuing a career as a professional actor, amateur model, passionate writer, and part-time lifeguard. Bailey Green is also, she tells us, an ex-smoker, die-hard sci-fi fan, and a TV addict, though I can't imagine where she would find the time. The first two stories on tonight's program complete the series of work tales that we began last week. Set in Quebec, these stories are told from the viewpoint of a student who juggles school, boyfriends, and minimum wage jobs with a great deal of wry wit and sass. Our first story goes a bit further back in time than the other stories we last played, back to when our narrator was 16 and called in, unexpectedly, to work a night shift. Let's listen now as Bailey Green reads Night Shift at the Golden Arches, tonight on Life Rattle.
Night Shift at the Golden Arches by Bailey Green. The headlights on my mom's Honda Civic cut through the darkness as we drive west down the Trans-Canada Highway. I'm not happy about this, Mom says. Me either. The exit 17 sign to Rigo glows in the night. To the right of the autoroute sits a Burger King, a Tim Hortons, a Harvey's, and a gas station. On the left lies the McDonald's where I have worked for the last 8 months. Mom flicks her right turn signal and glides off the autoroute onto the exit ramp. You told them you couldn't work night shifts. You're only 16, Mom says. They don't care. Anyway, they told me it would just be this one time. Mom turns left at the stop sign, and then right into the McDonald's parking lot. I reach over the gear shift and hug her. I sling my purse over my shoulder, hook my fingers through the laces of my work shoes, and step out of the car. Good night, Mommy. I love you. See you in the morning. Love you too. The smell of Mickey D's fries, familiar yet revolting, floods my nostrils as I push open the front door. Julien waves to me from the kitchen. Salut, Billy. He says, wiping sweat from his brow with the back of his hand. Francophones have a hard time saying my name. Salut, Julien, I say. I slip between the counter and the wall, walk past the fry bin and through the kitchen, then enter the coat room. After stuffing my purse inside a cube locker, I slip out of my running shoes and into my cheap black work shoes, the treads filled with salt and grease. In the office, my chef de corps for the night, Caroline, shuffles 20s in her hands. Her long plastic nails click as she counts. Salut, Bailey. T'es prête pour un samedi soir en drive-thru? Hello, Bailey. Ready for a Saturday night in drive-thru? Ready to waste a night of my life is what you should have asked, I think. Caroline's mauve eyes don't look up from her counting. The faux diamond stud, stuck in her right nostril, winks in the fluorescent light. I shrug and laugh. Je pense que oui. I think so. Ben, bien sûr. But of course, she says. Okay, here is the list of all the things you have to do tonight. I appreciate her brave attempt to speak English. She holds out a long ribbon of receipt paper. I feel a flicker of optimism as I scan the handwritten list. An enormous to-do list will keep me busy. I find time goes by faster when I'm busy. 10:59. I grab my employee card from its regular slot and swipe the magnetic strip through the punch-in machine. It chirps, and my employee number blinks on the screen. I place my card back in its slot. I walk back to the front of the restaurant and past the kitchen. I pass the long steel kitchen tables and run my fingers along the handles of the bizarre 3-foot-high library cabinets on top, whose heated drawers, instead of reference cards, hold different chicken meats and hamburger patties. I slide out 3 yellow drawers before finding the nuggets I crave. One cheek stuffed with fried chicken, I peer around the drawers and wink at Julien. He smiles. His pointy canines push against his lower lip as he pulls off his hairnet. His wavy brown hair falls around his narrow face. Alors, bonne nuit, ma belle. And so, good night, my beautiful, he says. Ma belle. I love that. I ask about his schedule. He says I'll see him the day after tomorrow. Ok, bonne nuit. Good night. Julien heads to the back office to punch out as Francois, the cook for the night, punches in. I tug my black baseball cap tight to my head. Véro hands me her headset as she dashes past me to punch out. I pour a bag of frozen fries into the dispensing machine, slide a basket of fries into the oil, and set the timer. The beep of a waiting car rings in my ear. Bonjour, je peux prendre votre commande? Hello, may I take your order, I say. Hours later, the deep fryer's alarm screams, and orders fill the board. I whip back and forth from the drive-thru window to the cash, to the burger box, to the fry bin, to the drink machine. I lean out the window and hand a bag of 2 bacon cheeseburgers to a cop. She smiles at me and pulls away from the drive-thru window. A Honda slides into view. The driver's side window rolls down. Your total is $14.92. How will you be paying? I ask. Ryan Ramage looks up at me. It'll be credit. Oh, hey, Bailey, he says. Ryan Ramage's younger sister, Brittany, was my best friend for the first half of elementary school. All grown up, Ryan's freckles still frame his green-blue eyes. His blonde hair falls in effortless bedhead curls. I swipe his card. Oh, hey, Ryan. How's it going? All right, just heading to chill with some buddies. He smiles. Nice. My burgundy polo t-shirt hot around my neck, I tear the receipt from the register and hand him his card, the receipt, and 2 supersized quarter-pounder trios. My hairnet itches where my cap presses it against my skin. Well, have a good night. Be safe, you know? He takes the brown paper bags from my hands and his thumb brushes the inside of my wrist. Got a panic button right here. My manic laugh echoes against the tiled walls. No shit, he says, blue eyes widening. Night, Bailey. Ryan's car cruises into the empty highway. My headset beeps in my ear. Over the mic, Francois asks Carol Ann for backup in a tight voice. It's his first night shift, too. I rub my eyes. 3:30. During a brief break in the rush, I attempt to restock the medium-sized cups for the third time. Kneeling on the floor, I rip a giant tower of cups from a sleeve of plastic and shove them into the dispenser beneath the soft drink machine. A pounding sound interrupts my struggle. I snap up and look over the counter. A bedraggled man in frayed jeans and a gray t-shirt slams his hand against the glass door. I shake my head at him. The dining area is closed. Baffled, he throws his arms wide. I shake my head again, vigorously. He slams a fist against the glass. Caroline, I shout. Caroline strides to the front. The man screams obscenities at the glass. Caroline faces him. Go away, sir. We are closed. I will not open this door. He gives her the finger and staggers into the night. She flips him off right back. She stays at the glass for a moment, adjusting her hair in the reflection of the window. "Merci," I say. "De rien," she says, chewing on her lip as she walks back behind the counter. Beep. My eyes prickle. Beep. I wipe the sweat from my upper lip and press the speak button over my right ear. "Yeah, hi. Yeah, is anyone there?" asks a drunk, obnoxious male voice. I hesitate. "Excuse me, could we have some..." another male voice says. "Animal semen!" yells another asshole. "Bonjour, je peux prendre votre commande?" "Hello, may I take your order?" I blurt, sending the car into a fit of drunken guffaws. "Yeah, can we have..." "Okay, no, shut up, dude. Can we have 3 double Big Mac trios, 2 supersized, all with a Coke? Then can we get..." "Titties!" the same asshole shouts. "Dude, shut up. Can we get an Angus burger trio with a Coke and 20 chicken nuggets and ketchup and honey and barbecue sauce? And 2 of the Cokes with no ice, 1 with extra ice? Is that all, sir?" "Yeah, babe." "Sure. Please proceed to the drive-thru window." I sink into a crouch and rest my head against the cool metal counter. My knees stiffen, and my lower back uncoils for a momentary second of relief. The deep fryer shrieks. 5:35. Every table and booth is empty. The restaurant is silent. The multicolored slides. The slides I spent an entire hour crawling through with a cloth and a spray bottle gleam in the vacant play structure. I curl up in a booth near the back of the dining area for my first break. I shiver and pull down the sleeves of my gray zip-up hoodie. I open a box of 10 McNuggets. When you work the night shift, the food is free. I dip a nugget in honey and chew it slowly. I dip the next nugget in sweet and sour sauce and the next in ketchup. I repeat my nugget ritual until the box is empty. 5:41. The deep fryer's muted cry sounds from the kitchen. I pull out a pack of Du Maurier king-size cigarettes and an orange Bic lighter from my hoodie pocket. When you work the night shift, all the doors must be locked, so smoking inside is permitted. McDonald's Canada wouldn't approve, but McDo Rigaud has no problem with it. I light a cigarette and take a deep drag. The nicotine washes over my frayed nerves. I exhale a blue cloud and rub my sand-filled eyes. I tap my ash in a mini ketchup cup. I smoke the whole cigarette, down to the filter. My stomach twists and churns. The back of my throat aches. 5:50. 1 more hour to go. 1 more hour to go.
That was Night Shift at the Golden Arches, written and read by Bailey Green. Our second story tonight is set in a family restaurant where our narrator experiences a multitude of human behaviors from both customers and co-workers. Let's listen now as Bailey Green reads her story, Jailbait.
Jailbait by Bailey Green. The Gerards, speaking in a cultured joual, at the same booth they sit in every Sunday, ask their waitress for more raw sugar. Debbie, her faded orange hair done up with black chopsticks, trudges over and fetches their sugar packs, plods back, and drops them on their table. They drink 3 coffees each and require 4 packs of sugar per cup. Beyond the vast concrete parking lot in front of the outlet strip mall, cars on Autoroute 40 speed east and west. The mid-morning sun glares through Coco Java's floor-to-ceiling windows. Customers enjoy a quiet brunch in this small restaurant on the outskirts of Hudson, on the outskirts of the West Island, on the outskirts of Montreal, Quebec. 3 mugs of coffee hook the middle joints of my fingers of my left hand and 3 mug handles hang from fingers on my right hand. A bowl of mini milk and creamers teeters on top. Laughter from a table of middle-aged couples at the center of the dining room assaults my ears. The bar squeezes my body as I slip out the narrow front opening. I stride towards the chattering couples. I place 3 cups on an empty table beside them. I set down 3 mugs of coffee and the bowl of milk and creamers on their table. I pick up the remaining 3. A balding man in a business suit shoves his chair back and into me. My knees buckle. 1/2 a mug of scalding coffee splashes over my hand. Ow! I inhaled sharply. The table hushes. The bald man glowers at me. You need to watch where you're going, sweetheart. That coffee just missed me. My lips press into a thin line. So sorry, sir. My fault. I'll get you another coffee. I rush back to the bar, pour a fresh cup, and deliver it to the table. I hand out the remaining mugs. I apologize. Again. The bell at the front door trills. Tony swaggers into the restaurant. A thin gold chain bounces against his collarbone. He catches my gaze and winks. My entire body itches as I hustle back to the counter where Debbie waits. Where's my toast order? She leans on the bar. Coming, I say. Sorry. Her drooping face turns towards the kitchen. She hauls herself over to the swinging door that divides the kitchen from the restaurant. She pokes her head inside. How much longer is my order gonna be? She berates Kostos, the head chef and owner. Debbie, would you get off my ass? Kostos yells back. Cook faster, and I will, she says, and then fully enters the kitchen. I toss 4 fresh slices of bread onto the rotating metal rack. The singed red skin on my right hand throbs. I rush over to the sink and run cold water over my hand. Good morning, sexy. Tony struts up to me. Hey, Tony, how are you? I say. He inhales through his teeth as his bulging gray eyes scan me up and down. I'm great. Thanks for asking, jailbait. When do you turn 17 again? Never. I roll my eyes. Hey, what happened to your hand? His voice softens. Some jerk shoved his chair into me, and I spilled coffee on myself. Acted like it was my fault, too, I say. Asshole. Aw, babe. Tony pulls my hand away from the water tap. His calloused hands encase my small fingers as he examines the burn. The rough pad of his thumb brushes the vein on the back of my hand. The toast tumbles out of the machine. Excuse me, Tony. I pull my hand back. Not a problem, he says. I lean away and sidestep past him. I butter the toast, cut it in 1/2, and nestle it in a wicker basket. Debbie exits the kitchen with 2 plates overflowing with eggs, bacon, fresh fruit, and home fries. I slide the toast basket down to her. She catches it without slowing down. Her long nails slide through the gaps in the wicker. Tony counts his float, the cash and coins for his shift, at the break table across from the bar. I sip a coffee with 3 creams and 2 sugars and remember that my Of Mice and Men essay is due tomorrow. I fidget with my black collared shirt and smooth my black tailored pants. From the back of the kitchen comes an eruption of yelling in Greek. Kostos and his father, Spiros, argue constantly over how to run the restaurant. Ownership has gone back and forth between them twice since I started working here. I shake a bit of vinegar onto a clean linen cloth and begin polishing a tray of cutlery in case Kostos storms out. "You look tired, honey," Tony says. "Not really. Legs a bit sore." I immediately regret my choice of body part. "How about I massage them for you?" He smiles his crooked smile. "No thanks, Tony. Not that sore." "How about you come sit down?" He spreads his legs and pats his knee. "Nope. I'm good." "Come on. Sit on Santa's lap and see what pops up." "Tony, you're awful." I sputter and avoid his eyes. He licks his front teeth. Debbie lumbers towards us and leans against the counter. Her gold bangles clink against the faux marble bar. She swings her head to look at Tony, and her chunky hoop earrings drag down her earlobes. "Good morning, Tony," she says. "Good morning, beautiful." Debbie flicks her sea-green eyes to me. "He never stops, does he?" "Not that I've seen," I say. Tony scoffs. I check the clock. 11 a.m., halfway through my shift. "Could I order some food from you, Debbie?" I ask. "Sure." She pulls out her pad and pencil. "Just the regular eggs Benedict, please." She passes my order off to the kitchen as two families walk in. I grab a handful of menus and seat them in booths. Tony gets the family with the hot soccer mom. Debbie, the family with two adorable toddlers. "How are you all doing today?" Tony claps his hands and rubs them together. I bust the table where the raw sugar couple, the Gerards, messily devoured their brunch. I scrape kiwi rinds and ketchup from their dirty dishes into the garbage at the back of the bar. Johnny pokes his head out of the small kitchen window. "Bailey, your food is ready." "Aw, you made it yourself? Thanks so much." I beam at him. "No problem. There's something special in it, too." He smiles back, and straight white teeth glow against his dark skin. He folds his tall frame down through the window and passes me my food. I grasp the warm plate. My mouth floods with saliva at the smell of Coco Java's home fries. I place the plate on the break table and sit down. I slice into the first poached egg. The yolk oozes out like lava, coating the ham and English muffin and melting into the buttery hollandaise sauce. Perfect. I raise the fork to my mouth and my eyes widen. 2.5 layers of pricey smoked salmon lie hidden beneath the ham. I turn my eyes back to the window. Johnny nods shyly. He tucks a few stray curls of his enormous afro back into his hairnet. "Johnny, what are you doing? Get your fucking head back in here and cook some shit. Let's go," Kostos barks. "Yeah, boss." Johnny pulls his upper body back into the kitchen. "I didn't promote you from dishy so you could chit-chat all the fucking..." The window slams shut. Tony darts behind the bar. "So, I have to make my own toast?" I nod. "It won't be as perfect as when you make it, baby," he says. "Shush your mouth, stupid," I say, food still in my mouth. Tony laughs, brews a fresh pot of coffee, and tosses bread into the toaster. Johnny, apron stained with grease, emerges from the kitchen and places a rack of clean cutlery on the bar. Behind Tony's back, Johnny winks at me. I devour another forkful of eggs Benny.
That was Jailbait, written and read by Bailey Green. Our next story moves away from the workplace and into summer camp, when our narrator is just 12 years old. Let's listen now as Bailey Green reads her story, Gravel Slide.
Gravel Slide by Bailey Green. I hide behind the grain mill, listening for any break in the silence. The setting sun casts an orange glow over the empty village. I'm aware of the danger I'm in by staying in enemy territory. My calves cramp. Mosquitoes whine in the lazy summer heat. I swat at them. With the tourists gone, each building whispers its history to me. Upper Canada Village, an hour outside of Ottawa, remains frozen in the 1860s. Trained actors play inhabitants and recreate slices of life from over 100 years ago. It's my second year attending the Time Travelers Camp. By day, we are the children of the village, complete with 19th century costumes. We attend school, learn trades, play games, and all the while photographed by eager sightseers. At night, we turn back into rambunctious modern kids and play games like manhunt, sardines, and hide-and-seek with access to the coolest playground ever. Tonight, it's capture the flag. I can't stay here much longer. I've searched half of their side and haven't seen the flag. I creep along the back wall and run my fingers over wood 10 times older than me. From the corner, I have a clear view of the curving road. I imagine myself as a Jedi as I sneak to the last safe vantage point. I hear laughter in the distance. I saunter out into the open. Gravel crunches behind me. I whirl around. Kevin stands 20 feet away. We halt, eyes locked, jaws gaped open. His white teeth flash at me as our muscles explode into action. My running shoes pound the gravel. His steps echo close behind. My heart beats a frantic rhythm in my ears. We laugh breathlessly as we fly down the empty road. I want to impress him. I want to beat him. One tag, and it's over. A curve in the road approaches, and Kevin's so close I can hear his breathing. If I take the curve on the inside, I can lose him. My ponytail falls out from the elastic band as I pick up speed. I look over my shoulder and stick out my tongue, then feel my right foot slip out from underneath me. I hit the ground sliding. Kevin yells my name. A cloud of dust rises and I blink in shock. I break into tears as the pain kicks in. Kevin crouches by my side, his blue eyes wide as he gawks at my leg. A scrape runs from my knee to my ankle. Drops of ketchup-colored blood peek through the layer of dust on my skin. Little pieces of rock stick out of my leg. My left palm is missing a chunk of skin from trying to break my fall. I cry so hard that I whimper. Kevin pulls me up onto my feet, supporting my weight on his shoulders. We hobble along. You're going to be okay, Bailey. You're doing great. Only a little further. I snivel quietly. I didn't think I would catch you. Really? No. You're pretty fast. Thank you. And your leg is really gross. I giggle. My counselors, Paige and Rebecca, sprawl on the steps of the Grand City Hall. As Kevin and I approach, their smiles disappear. They spring into motion, Paige wiping the dirt from my face, Rebecca sorting through the first aid kit. Kevin perches to the side. I shiver. He pulls off his neon orange hoodie and hands it to me. I tug it over my t-shirt. We're going to try and clean it. Okay, sweetheart? Paige says. I nod and chew my lip, Rebecca tears the strip off an alcohol packet. Kevin takes my right hand. I thread my fingers through his warm, dry fingers. The alcohol burns like white-hot needles. I count Kevin's freckles. You can go rejoin the game, Kevin. We'll take care of her, Rebecca promises. I smile and nod. He pats my shoulder and lopes up the drive. Kevin saves me his chocolate muffin at breakfast the next morning. He picks the same morning activity as me. He hides extra Band-Aids in his pockets. We feed pigs and learn to milk cows. We play with the barn kittens. He likes cats. He's the only boy I know who does. I tell him I think he looks like young Superman. He tells me I'm weird, but he laughs. I love making Kevin laugh.
That was Gravel Slide, written and read by Bailey Green. We'll finish off tonight's program with a poignant love story. Let's listen now as Bailey Green reads her story, Momo.
Momo, by Bailey Green. August 26, 2010. Two large rolling suitcases and three cardboard filing boxes block access to my cupboard. I eye them warily and hum Katy Perry's Teenage Dream as I sit in the center of my single bed. In 4 days, I move to Mississauga to attend university, 500 kilometers away from my home in Saint-Lazare, Quebec. I have 96 hours left. Mom flips a grilled cheese for me in the kitchen. The tree branches outside the window dapple sunshine across the wall. My cell phone buzzes on my desk. I snatch it, my pulse suddenly pounding, and read the text. Hey, what are you up to right now? My thumbs fly along the keys. Nothing. Why? No reason. I just miss you. I roll my eyes and snap the phone shut. It vibrates again. I'm coming to your goodbye party tomorrow, but for now, come open your door. I shriek and scramble off the bed. Mom, he's coming. I had a feeling. I knew it. I slide down the hall and into the kitchen. I bounce up and down as my arms spasm in all directions. Slow down. Who? Mom raises her eyebrows, curves her lips. Simon. Yes, he is. I knew he wouldn't wait until tomorrow night. Well, well. Should I make him a grilled cheese? No, that's okay. I bolt back to my room. I shimmy out of my stretched-out leggings and baggy t-shirt and into my smallest jean shorts. I slip on a magenta bra. A snug black tank top completes my outfit. I shake out my long brown hair and admire my tan in the mirror. The pulse in my neck throbs. I need to stop sweating. I inhale my grilled cheese and stare out the window at the intersection of St. Louis and Kentucky Road. Mom pencils in another number in her Sudoku puzzle. She snickers as I fidget. Simon's black Mazda turns right on Kentucky Road, left on Kentucky Drive, and straight into my driveway. I dash out the door before he can pull up the handbrake. Hey, Lena! He's the only one allowed to call me by my first name. Simon springs out of the car and swings me up into his arms. My feet dangle in the air. Maman, I shout. In second year of Cégep, college, I struggled to find a nickname for Simon. His name doesn't exactly lend itself to being shortened. I asked him if he'd ever had a nickname, and he said, well, a girl I once knew called me Maman. Translated literally from French, Maman means my. I gave it my own spin, and for me, Maman came to mean my mine. The name stuck. I wanted to surprise you. I was at Abbott, and I thought, hey, Bailey is probably home right now. So I got in my car, and now, here I am. He stumbles over his words. I drag him up the path and into my house. Allô, Simon. Bonjour, Nancy. He kisses my mother's cheeks. Our small red dog, Wesley, wriggles through and around Simon's legs. He rubs Wesley's shiny fur coat. Mom, I think Simon and I are probably going to head to Saddlebrook Park. Sure. It's a gorgeous day. Will I see you two later? Definitely. I hug her, resting my chin on top of her head. She squeezes me. I slide into the familiar passenger seat of Simon's car. I kick aside coffee cups, school papers, and MP3 cables. He slides into the driver's seat and pulls me into another hug. The gear shift pushes into my stomach. We haven't seen each other since graduating from John Abbott College's Professional Theater Acting Program 3 months ago. During the school year, we were together every day for hours on end. In the summer, he returns to his life in Mascouche, an hour away from here, north of Montreal. We cruise along the winding residential streets of Saint-Lazare. A cigarette dangles from his mouth. I quit smoking a month ago. My fingers tap at the absence between my lips. We pull into the parking lot and stroll to the open soccer field. Simon runs ahead, doing cartwheels, handstands, and the occasional backflip. I grin. I find his boundless energy incredible. We settle on the bleachers. Words flow between us. The inside jokes and memories endless. His accent is thicker than usual after a summer at home. The clouds block the sun and the air cools. I rub my chilly legs. Our explosions of laughter bounce off the maple trees. Look, Lena, I want to say something about how last semester ended. I pull my knees to my chest. Let's not, Simon. No, I want to. After everything we've been through. I snort. Oh, gosh. Let's see. You fell for me in first year, and when I finally left Josh and loved you back, you vanished. So in second year, I hooked up with Steve to spite you. You did not like that. Yeah, well, Steven is an idiot. Simon lights up another Peter Jackson. Yeah, he is. You finally had your chance. 3 amazing months. But no, we couldn't actually be happy together. Simon methodically cracks each knuckle and stares out at the field. I take a deep breath. I forgave you. I tried to move on, but you couldn't leave me alone. So I did whatever I could to be close to you. Tabarnak, we're a bit fucked. His sincerity erases all my bitterness, and I reach out and gently punch his shoulder. There's no one like us, Lena. I shake my head, chew my thumbnail, try and put on a smile. You disappeared, right at the end of our 3 years together. I don't want to talk about it, so let's just... C'est assez. That's enough. C'est mon tour. It's my turn. He snaps around and faces me. Last semester, I was a fool for going after Justine, a girl with a boyfriend. Well, it wasn't the first time. Lena, listen to me. You were right about why I fell for her, about why I stopped talking to you, why I said those horrible things to you when you called me on it. You were right the whole time. Our friends kept telling me to leave you alone. I told them you came to me, but the truth is, I couldn't stop myself. I wanted you, and I wanted that to stop. I chased Justine because I thought she would make me forget. I stare at the tensed muscles in his back, at the line of his jaw, at the tears sliding down his cheek. I ruined our last 2 months together. I'm so sorry, Bailey. I couldn't replace you. I'm not going to love anyone like I love you. This is the first time he's apologized. He swipes his cheeks and runs his fingers through his thick black hair. I rest my hand on his neck. I don't know what to say other than thank you. Love you, Maman. Love you, Lena. Stay for dinner? I ask. Sure. I'll be late for work. He shrugs and laughs. And do you want to come to McKibben's later? Mike and Vanessa can't come to my goodbye party, so instead we're meeting up tonight. Then I'll come to McKibben's after my shift. We jump off the bleachers and amble towards the parking lot. I feel a tug on my hand and he pulls me in. My body hums. My arms wrap around his wide shoulders. He smells so familiar. We sway. I feel safe. I tilt my chin up to him. His eyes flick to my lips. Are we going to do this? Again? He rumbles. The sun breaks from behind the clouds. I laugh into his lips at the cheesy timing. His fingers splay along my spine and we kiss and I wind my fingers in his hair. A woman passes and tisks disdainfully. In response, Simon dips me low and squeezes my bum. I slap him away, giggling, and sprint to the car. We eat dinner with my family. Simon sits to my right as he has so many times before. He heaps praise on the delicious spaghetti sauce and the mint chocolate brownies. Mom glows. My brother, Trevor, gives him props, and they debate the merits of the new Diablo video game. Dad and Simon trade stories and jokes until we're all in tears. He leaves after dinner for Trois-Rivières, 2.5 hours late for work, promising to drive back after his shift ends. I wonder if he will. I drive to McKibben's Irish pub and meet a few friends who can't come to my goodbye party. We eat nachos and reminisce. Simon meets us around 11. The night ends early with goodbye hugs and no tears. Walking to my car, the wind chills me. Summer is dying. Simon and I race along the highway, the familiar way home rushing by in a blur. We pull up to the red brick bungalow that has been my home since I was 3. Mom made a bed for Simon on the living room couch. I brush my teeth and see reflected in the mirror the baby pictures of Trevor and I hung on the bathroom walls. I tiptoe into Mom's room and kiss her goodnight. She blinks at me sleepily and calls me Bunny. I call goodnight to Dad, who works on his photos in the basement. Down the hall, Trevor's bedroom light is out. Simon waits on the patchwork quilt. I choke on a sob. He reaches out for me. I curl in his lap, feeling very small. He plays with my hair with his strong hands and massages my scalp. He tugs and pulls gently, separating each knot, pulling the long strands up and letting them fall. I run my fingernails along his forearm, tickling is his favorite thing. I can't stop crying. He cups my face and kisses my salty lips. A voice in my head whispers, "This is the last time." I wrap myself around him. His hands slide up my back. I leave home in 84 hours. I leave my home, my friends, Trevor, Daddy, Mommy, him. We'll be right back.
That was Momo, written and read by Bailey Green. That concludes Life Rattle number 1258. My name is Laurie Callis. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune in to next week's Life Rattle Classics program, as Virginia Ashbury features two seasonal treasures, written and read by Mike Fay.